Thank you for downloading and listening to this podcast from RunThinkShootLive.com. For more podcasts, including exclusive interviews and roundtable chats, please visit RunThinkShootLive.com/listen.
Hello and welcome to the discussion podcast from Run, Think, Shoot, Live. My name is Philip and welcome to this new monthly podcast. Myself and various hosts and guests will be discussing the most interesting threads from the Half-Life subreddit. Over the course of a month, you'd be surprised at some of the threads. And I feel it would make a fun podcast, so, you know, here we are. However, we won't be limited to only discussing those threads, and I very much hope that we go off on tangents. So that's the idea of these podcasts. So let's get started. Joining me today are two modders, Don, a.k.a. Unk, and James, a.k.a. Azel.
Azel.
Is that right?
I don't really go by that name anymore.
Oh, okay. All right. So can we get rid of it? Because I never could pronounce it. Can I just delete that?
Yeah.
All right, good. Have you got a new nickname?
Even though only my mother calls me James.
I know. We've gone through this. I've got to keep doing it. Unless you really hate it, I won't do it anymore. But I love it.
Fair enough.
All right. So I'm going to call you Mr. Critical, but we'll come on to that a bit later, huh?
You can call me a moody bastard.
All right, okay. So welcome to you both. Don, how has your week been?
Oh, it's been pretty good. Thanks.
Okay. Working hard at Scram?
Yes, actually. Hopefully in a couple months, we'll see. No promises, you know.
All right, okay. And James, you've been modding, which is unusual at the moment, I believe. Is that right?
I took some time out to go and play with some other engines and play with Unity for a bit and that kind of thing. And I've sort of come back to doing a bit of more Half-Life 2 modding at the moment just because it's just like coming home, you know?
Once you go hammer, you never go stammer. I don't know what that would be. All right, well, welcome back into the Hammer community. That would make a good website, Hammer Community. All right, so as I mentioned, we're going to be discussing these threads. So I sent you the list earlier, yesterday or later. So the one I'm going to start with is the playing through Half-Life for the first time. Pretty good graphics for a game made in 1998. So if you guys want to open that one up or view the stream, if it's easier for you, but you'll be behind. The reason I chose this one, just to get us started and then you guys can take over, was that it's interesting that people are still new to the game. I mean, what are we? We are almost 20 years after the release. I mean, it's like 17 years after the release and people are still coming in and playing it and sort of being surprised by it. And that's why I was quite curious about this this thread. Don?
Yeah, to quickly take off on your last point there is that people are still playing it for the first time. I think that's really due to Valve running Steam. You know, if they weren't the ones responsible for Steam and things like that, I don't know if we would have gotten a playable Half-Life in this day and age. It might be one of those relics from the late 90s. That doesn't quite work well anymore, or you know, it breaks here and there. They still seem to keep it playable. They're actually on GitHub updating the source code frequently. They've updated for Linux a couple of years ago. And anyway, here's one of our famous tangents you've been talking about, Phil. So yeah, back to the shot. It's a screenshot of when you hop out of the pipe on surface tension onto the cliff. And, you know, the original post is, you know, pretty good graphics for a game in 98. And I'm not sure if the original poster was kind of being, you know, facetious or sarcastic with this or what. But, if you take it at face value, yeah, it's an okay shot maybe for 1998. But this, for me, personally, is one of the more memorable spots in Half-Life.
Yeah, it is. When you come out there and the aeroplanes go by. And do you remember it, James?
Yeah, of course, and I think it's interesting what Unc was saying about that. You know, we've seen some classics sort of been re-released. I mean, System Shock 2, the original Deus Ex in Game of the Year edition version, and I really think that period of time and those three games, especially Half-Life, Deus Ex, and System Shock 2, really formed the mold for a lot of the shooters and a lot of the games that we see today. And I think that new players now, or younger players that never played them, obviously go back to these games and sort of feel in some ways they're almost kind of derivative and, oh, you know, whatever, because it's all being done, you know, now, based,
yeah,
all created by these games in the first place. So, but I still think that there's a really, you know, all of them have something really unique to offer that you're not going to find in. So I think games these days are far more linear.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of people rediscovering them or discovering them for the first time who've never played.
Let me throw this out here. Maybe you guys will laugh at me, but do you think the fact that we've got like Minecraft that has sort of blown away the idea that graphics have to be important to have a great game, that those new players are perhaps more open to the idea of graphics aren't so important? You think that's possible?
I think that's probably the case, and I would also credit sort of the resurgence or surgence maybe of sort of retro themed mobile games, you know, on your phone. That a lot of, you know, you're not just playing for nostalgia. You know, a lot of younger people these days play games just because they're fun. Even if, you know, once you can accept sort of the blocky or simple graphics, you know, us older folks might see it as retro, but they see it as just a fun game. So I think that plays into it.
It's not retro for them. It's completely new.
Yeah. So I was thinking, like a lot of the new indie titles on Greenlight and stuff like that, I was playing, there's a game called Hammerfall, which is a bit like, I don't know if you guys know it, but it's a bit like, the original Gauntlet, if you know what I mean. It's that top-down, you know, around dungeon-y type thing. And it's great. It's really good fun. But it doesn't matter anymore, you know. There's so many great titles out there and so many great studios creating something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's cool that people are still coming in and still sort of enjoying it. I'm quite pleased with that.
Valve were very clever with what they had available in the engine at the time. So if you go back and, you know, I mean, you can create a map for Half-Life 1, and if you do it wrong, it can look pretty bad. If you do it right, it can all seem to be, you know, almost a plausible environment, and your brain doesn't really care about it anymore if you put the level together the right way. And, you know, I just think Valve are great at that, and they use what they had, and certainly, and it all blends together, and suddenly you're in this environment and you don't really care anymore, you know.
Yeah, and perhaps also the resurgence, I say the resurgence, but that's not the right word, that people are doing more things with the Gold Source engine. Of course, the most obvious one that springs to mind is the Core, but there have been others that have done some amazing things, and I wonder if that's sort of getting people interested as well. Probably not, but...
Well, you never know. I know Sven Co-op is working on their version 5, and they've actually been given some source code to the engine itself from Valve. So they may be twisting it and improving it in a way we haven't even seen yet. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that.
It's amazing. Yeah. Those guys never bothered going source, did they? It's never been a thing.
No, they never did. No.
Yeah, so it just shows you know, how much fun and how much you can get out of the engine still. It's great.
Well, I still play Tetris. I've got like one of those little Game Boys. And how more basic can you get than a few blocks? And I still love playing it. And I've played it for 20 years or something, even more. So, I mean, I'm really of the opinion that the graphics improve things, but they don't necessarily make the game.
I think if the rules of the game are good and the game itself is fun, then it's irrelevant. The graphical quality is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, and I'm pleased about that because I didn't like the way that PC gaming was going, and perhaps it still is, where it was getting more and more and more detailed, and that was the only thing that people seemed to be interested in, and I think that was a big mistake.
I have to admit, I played Wolfenstein: The New Order the other week.
Mm-hmm.
It took a week to download it. You know what I mean? Install it. Just because of the sheer size of the damn thing.
17 gigabytes or something,
insane.
I think.
It was absolutely crazy. I think it was more than that. It was just absolutely crazy. And by the time when I actually played it, the gameplay, meh, was all right. I mean, it looked fantastic, but it really didn't make up for the fact that the game itself just wasn't as much, you know, as much fun as it should have been.
Yeah. But the first one was great. I loved the first one.
Oh, I love Wolfenstein. I love the Return to Castle Wolfenstein as well. It's great.
But yeah. Oh, that's what I meant. Yeah. I didn't mean Wolfenstein, the first one. I meant the Return, the second one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. So that was that particular thread.
Yeah,
so the next one.
I want a quick point before we move on. That this,
the
actual shot that we're looking at is the background. You know, is only a 256 by 256 pixel.
Yeah.
Texture, believe it or not. So, whether or not the original poster was kind of being sarcastic and insulting Half-Life, that stands as it is. It's the skyboxes in Half-Life were really low resolution, but you know, kind of blended into the background fairly well for the most part.
So. I think what they're actually talking about here is not graphical quality. I think they're talking about how much the environment's been sold to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like how much are they in the environment? How much of
that? And that's why it worked. Yeah, that's really your point, Jim. I think that's really why this worked in Half-Life. To me, this is one of the wow moments in Half-Life.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. All right, then. So the next one is the video of Half-Life 2 Super Secret Spot. Don't know if you guys have had a chance to watch this video. It's sort of quite funny. Let me just turn that off. It's not so much that he's found it, because it's not particularly secret. It's just the way he makes these sort of videos. He sort of cuts and jumps, and then he's doing something else. And have you watched it?
Yeah, I watched it and I was trying to work out exactly what the point of the video was. The point of the hidden area he's talking about is with the singing Vortigern, right?
Singing Vortigern, correct? Yeah,
which you know most of us know about. So, but he's using the backward movement,
bunny hop.
Yes, bunny hop to get to it and to blast himself out of the map, and you know, and I think. When he was kind of doing these other bits afterwards, so that's the first clip, fine, you found the secret area, fine. But then there's a couple of other clips afterwards where he appears to be trying to do something, but
yes.
Not really sure what it is, you know? And it's all going horribly wrong, but it's quite funny.
Yeah, I mean, he's stacking all of these boxes and crates and things into this lift with Judith Mossman, and I'm thinking, okay, this guy me and him are going to be best friends, because you know what I'm like for stacking crates and boxes and all that sort of stuff. But then at the end, it cuts to nothing, and I'm thinking, what have I watched? Have you seen it, Don?
Yeah, you know, I made the mistake of watching it with the sound off the first time. I was listening to music or doing something else at the time. And it didn't strike me as anything special. I mean, yeah, we all know that the secret Vortigern and things like that, and you know the way he gets to it with the backward bunny hopping is interesting. But I replayed it and listened to it once I saw it was being upvoted, and it's pretty entertaining. You know, this guy is sort of a comical twist on a typical Let's Play video that's been he just does these absurd things like 3 hours later, and I guess that was his other video, stacking in the vent in Nova Prospect or something like that. He's stacking hundreds of crates and barrels to get into a vent that you're not supposed to get to, and he cuts to a 3 hours later view, and it's just if you don't take him at face value, which is what I first did, and then thinking that it was showing us how to get to the secret Vortigern spot. They're actually pretty entertaining if you watch them in full and keep an open mind.
Yeah,
there was a guy who did a kind of a Let's Play thing of one of my maps a while ago, and it was in Russian or something, but it was brilliant because it would sort of cut to a scene of him trying to do something and it all going horribly wrong and into swearing and then it cutting to the next one. It was very funny.
So you can swear in Russian now, can you?
yeah, I'm learning.
Okay, so one of the things I liked was that they're not too long. They're like, it's like a minute and a half or something, and that secret vent has got like nearly 20,000 views. And it's silly, but I thought it was kind of cool that we're still making funny videos over a game that is so old, and so I thought that was quite a funny little thing. And he's maybe making some others, and generally people seem to like those kind of videos. So,
yeah, I'm glad it didn't go on too long. It would have maybe overstayed its welcome, but I would like to see, some others by him, hopefully in the future.
Yeah, if he makes some others, I'd invest another 90 seconds of my life just to see if there's something funny or cool in it. So, Super Six Plicks, please keep making them. All right, so the next one on the list is the pain of playing Episode 2 in 2007. So I thought this was quite funny because it really it kind of captures the feeling that those of us who have been around since episode 2 finished, we actually do feel that. There's a lot of new people coming in and saying, oh yeah, I've played it and I really want to see part 3 now, but they don't know what we've been through. And I thought it was kind of, you know, quite a funny article. Don, did you read it? Did you like it?
Yeah, you know, I tend to skip over things like this, anything that kind of reopens the wound of waiting, but I can understand, you know, the point of it. And yeah, I was recently watching a television series through on Netflix, and it's almost, you could draw some parallels, you know. Now we've got, say it's a television series that was from 10 years ago or something like that. You don't have to wait week to week or season to season. You can just watch it all the way through in you know, a couple of weeks or a week if you want to. So you sort of have a different take on things if you were, you know, there watching it live. And like in Half-Life, yes, we've been waiting. Probably most of us played episode 2 when it came out. You know, we've been waiting 8 years now, and it's already frustrating. And so people who just play Half-Life 2 may not quite have the same experience, but in general, it just, this is, you know, a bit of a sensitive subject for me. I'm patiently waiting, and I actually try to steer clear of as much Half-Life 3 talk as I can for the most part.
Well, this is very emotional. I'm almost thinking that you've got like a box of tissues next to your desk, and you're going to start sniffing or something in a minute.
It's not something I like to talk about, Phil.
James, what do you think?
I'm a bit unclear on this one. The whole Half-Life 3 thing's become such a parody of itself anyway. It's such a, you know, it's ridiculous, or even episode 3, that these days I don't even consider it. You know, it's sort of, I think we all know it's probably going to go VR, you know, and with everything that's going on and Valve are doing at the moment, and there's all of that kind of filled in, but I just think it's, this, that kind of stuff just isn't helpful. It's the same old rubbish. It comes up every other week. You know what I mean? I think there's another post further down, which is saying, bear with me. There's another post we're going to talk about later on, which is about the stages of going through. You know, sort of.
Yes, but I didn't take this one so much about Half-Life 3, because as you probably know that I haven't included any of the threads about Half-Life 3 because you're right, it's a parody, and it's just, I'm not even interested in talking about that. I just thought it was an interesting way of talking about the pain of waiting rather than specifically for Half-Life 3. So yeah. I get your kind of meh idea about it, but I thought there was more to it than that, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess. And I guess I've just gotten used to not, you know? Not
caring. Actually, I think this is a good time for a tangent, because what Don was talking about is something that I've been thinking about as well, about how the act of waiting, irrespective of for whatever it is, I wonder if we are really the first generation, or at least one of the first generations, to have to worry about that. Because in the past, they had it once a week. And yes, they had to wait a week for their next TV show, but they knew no different. That was the way it was, and that's what happened. And there wasn't much hype about a film. Maybe a little bit before it came out, you'd hear about it, and then it got released. Whereas now we're bombarded with knowing what's going to happen like 2 years in advance. Oh, they're making a, you know, Avengers movie, and it's released for summer 2017 and stuff. And now we can download, I don't know, House of Cards. House of Cards can be downloaded or watched on Netflix straight away. That we really have lost, I don't want to say we've lost patience, because I prefer it the way it is, but waiting has become a problem. How about that?
Yeah, it's this whole idea of instant everything. Nope, I would say it is a loss of patience for the most part, even though I consider myself patient in general. I don't want to wait to watch something if I can watch it now, you know, so...
No, I think it's,
I don't know, it's the whole mobile phone phenomenon too. I think, you know, anybody who has an idle moment tends to whip out their cell phone and start doing something or other, and it's you know, sort of a plague that's enveloped the world, I think, in the last few years.
It's true. And I think the problem is that as well, is that producing something of such high quality takes time. You know, it takes a lot of time, especially in game development, because it's about experimentation. And, you know, and eventually you find the, you know, the right combination of things to make it as good as Half-Life 2 was. But it's essentially, it's a self-developing thing. You know, you iterate until you think you've got it right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind the wait. I mean, I've really got no problems. I'd like a bit more communication, but okay, we're not going to get on that. But I've just, while you've been talking, I opened up an XKCD. I know Don's a fan of that as well. I've just put it in the Steam chat, in the Skype chat. If this is new for you, this is really quite funny. I don't know if this is true or not. I don't know whether he really got these quotes, but he's got these quotes from like the 1880s and stuff about, you know, life is becoming too fast. You know, we send a letter, yeah, and 3 days later we get a reply. My God, you know, and stuff like this. And it's quite a long one from him, but it really makes you think that, you know, are we as fast as we think we are? And, you know, there is more to come. Do you think this is a real, these are real, Don, these quotes?
Probably are. I mean, knowing the author of these, he's a pretty meticulous guy. So it wouldn't surprise me if these were actual, you know, quotes and blurbs from these various publications. But, you know, I think maybe the point or a point is here that there's a limit to how fast we can get, right? Once you get to near instantaneous messaging and replies, there's, you know, there's nothing faster than that. So
we're
approaching an asymptote of, you know, how fast can modern life be?
Yeah, there's also that great theory of we're capturing so much and recording so much of life now that we couldn't possibly ever view all of it, you know?
It's right, like, yeah,
content for us ever to be able to even think about reviewing. So yeah, it's crazy. It's like, well, I guess the point is I think there's a theory that sooner or later you're literally recording everything that's happening at real time. Do you see what I mean?
I think Arthur C. Clarke predicted that the certain amount of space we would need, I think it was, well, after gigabytes, you've got terabytes. After terabytes, is it picabytes or pentabytes?
Petabytes, I think.
Petabytes. He reckoned that, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, once we get to 9 petabytes, we can record the whole of our lives. So we could have like Google Glass or something similar, and it would just record everything that we think and say, and that would be enough to record a whole person's life.
Given the revelations from Edward Snowden, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, because that would be then what's... So while we've been talking, I've just searched on one of these XKD things, this Israel Zangwill, the Bachelor's Club, and there is a person called this, and he was around at the same sort of time, 1891, so it is possible that all of that was real. So anyway, that's quite funny. So we just have to wait. That's all it is. We have to go through those stages. All right. The next one. Were there any games in the Half-Life franchise that were just bad? So obviously we got like a new player here. And this particular poster is saying that he's played 2 and half of 1. So I assume he means he's played Half-Life 2 and half of Half-Life 1. So, I mean, when we did The Tree, which was 2011, I was surprised at how good I thought the black sheep or the blue sheep of the family was, which was Blue Shift and Episode 1. And on replaying them, I realized that they were actually really good games. But do you think that there are any bad games in the Half-Life franchise? James, you start with that.
I think the only one that sticks out to me, not bad, but just...
meh.
Not near the quality, is really Blue Shift. I think that really stands out for me as being... it just doesn't fire my imagination as much as the others. You know, it doesn't. I don't think I ever felt as... it felt to me like an add-on, whereas Opposing Force didn't. Opposing Force felt to me like we were back in the world, back in the story again from a different perspective, but effectively we were playing through those series of events. And although that's also true for Blue Shift, to me it didn't feel that way. And I don't know why. I think... I honestly... maybe it's because they changed the look and feel of the cops, you know, the blue guys or whatever.
But there's also nothing new in Blue Shift.
Yeah, that's true. You don't get the barnacle gun or anything like that. Yeah.
You got nothing new. But, I mean, Don probably remembers better than I, but, I mean, we were lucky to even get that because that was supposed to be a PS2 release, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was Dreamcast.
Converted.
Yeah,
Dreamcast.
Yeah. It was slated for the Dreamcast and then converted for the PC once the Dreamcast port was canceled. Yeah, I would say Blue Shift and maybe Decay fall into this category. Neither of them are bad by any stretch. They're both enjoyable, but it's a matter of expectations, right? If we knew Blue Shift didn't have any new content and it was kind of a bonus, if you will. I mean, yes, you had to purchase it separately, but it was something we weren't going to get otherwise on PC if the Dreamcast port was actually released. If you knew it was just an add-on, it didn't have any new content in it, and it was fairly short, you know, maybe 2 to 3 hours. If you look at it, you go in with that expectation, it's a pretty solid and tight release. I mean, it's a really well-done set of maps. Yes, it doesn't feel like Opposing Force, and I think that's where it sort of suffers because people compare it to Opposing Force. But in its own, it's still a pretty solid experience.
If it were a mod, it would probably, yeah, it'd be the best Half-Life mod, you know what I mean, out there.
Right, exactly. That's kind of my point. You know, yes, it's from Gearbox, but if you look at it in the context of other mods that don't really have any new content, it's, you know, and just even just playing through it, what we did, I guess, a couple years ago, Philip, it's a fairly tight add-on. There's just not much boring filler material in it compared to a lot of other games these days.
Yeah, I'm just checking the tree page now. It took me 3 hours to play through it altogether. But you're right, there's not a lot of filler. It's much tighter, and some of the listeners may remember I actually interviewed some of the guys at Valve, especially one of the guys, the level designer, forgive me, I can't remember his name.
It was Gearbox.
That's my memory. Yeah, but I mean...
No, you said Valve, it was Gearbox.
Oh, I did. You're right. My apologies. The guys at Gearbox, and he sort of had the same opinion that, you know, he felt it was unfairly, you know, rated because it didn't do anything amazing, but it didn't do anything badly. And it was kind of like, the word you used there, Don, was solid. It was a solid release. But it's always compared to the other releases, isn't it? That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the thing about Opposing Force as well is that, and the thing that players are looking for, is they're looking for an expansion on the universe they love, right? So they're looking to know more about the world. They're looking to know more about what happened, more about the events, more about the characters and all that. And Blue Shift didn't really bring anything from that perspective. Like, Opposing Force did, but Blue Shift really didn't. There wasn't any, you know, big twists or turns or things that gave you a completely different perspective on anything.
Yeah.
Didn't change anything, you know?
No, that's fair enough. Matt Armstrong was the chap I was thinking about. I'm just looking at that page now. All right.
And I think, you know, you mentioned Episode 1. To me, I think Episode 1's awesome. Episode 1, fine, it may not be... It's not Episode 5. Episode 2 is better, and I think Episode 2 is probably the best out of all of the games for me, including, you know, like Half-Life 2 and Half-Life 1. Episode 2 really hit the pinnacles. But, you know, to me, Episode 1 is as good as Half-Life 1.
Yeah, I mean, if we were just talking about Blue Shift and we didn't have any of the other games to compare it, we wouldn't be saying, oh, well, it's okay. We'd be saying, wow, that was freaking awesome.
Yeah. It's just purely by comparison that it suffers.
Yeah. All right. Don, anything to finish? I wasn't sure if you were coming in there.
No, I was just flipping through the responses in that thread, and it doesn't look like anybody has a good answer that there were any Half-Life games that sucked. So.
No. I mean, they talk about TF2 and, you know, Go and stuff like that, but, of course, they're not in the Half-Life franchise.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a different question. And Alien Swarm is mentioned and Ricochet.
Same thing. Those are not Half-Life games. They're on the same engine, of course, but they share some assets, but they're not Half-Life games.
No. Okay, so before we move on, actually, you mentioned Decay. Now, I know that a few people have actually been playing that online. So and I actually contacted somebody on Steam about it, but I forgot his name. My apologies. So if you're one of the people who can actually currently get Decay to work and play with a friend, please contact me, because Don and I really want to play this together. I want to do a stream about it. But the last time we tried, if you remember, Don, we couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, we spent a good couple hours there fiddling with Hamachi, the networking client and everything.
Yeah, but somebody's been playing it recently, like within the last few months.
Oh, okay.
So I know that it can be done, and if you are smarter than Don and I, please contact us, because I want to play that. So, have you played that, James?
No, I haven't actually. I've always wanted to, and I've never really had the setup to be able to do it.
I tried it single player, because I think it's possible, isn't it?
Yes.
You just have to keep switching between the two players, and it was like, oh my god, I can't even remember my name sometimes, let alone what I'm supposed to be doing here with two people. So, all right, well, if we can get it working, maybe we'll set up a little group of people who want to play it with each other.
So, people playing that through an emulator or what?
No, but you have to do it through a server, because it's like a co-op game.
Oh. Yeah, it was ported by a mod team with Gearbox's permission to PC mod. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but the trick is it's a co-op game, so they don't play it through Sven Co-op. They play it through a sort of a dedicated networking link between the two clients.
Okay, so fingers crossed we can get that working. All right, now the next one on the list doesn't have very many opinions or responses, but I thought it was actually quite interesting. This chap has sort of posted that, you know, he's made a full-length Half-Life playthrough videos with no commentary, and for me that was like the most interesting. So I checked out his site or the YouTube channel, and basically what he's got is he's got like all of the mods, plus he's got the cinematic mods, and I found that quite interesting. That concept of not worrying about commentating, not worrying about being funny or insightful or intelligent, just putting the videos out there for people who maybe want to watch it. I thought that was kind of a cool thing to do. He didn't get much response from the Reddit people, but what's your thoughts on that, Don?
Yeah, you know, I didn't watch his videos or look at his page at all, but the concept is kind of interesting, right? I mean, we've seen Let's Play videos and you know, streams on Twitch take off in the last handful of years, and the vast majority of them are, you know, people commentating or joking or talking to their friends on Skype while they're playing and that type of thing, or interacting with the chat in Twitch, let's say. But it's an interesting perspective of just watching somebody play through a game. I actually did this a couple years ago with, it was the original Halo, I think. So I had an Xbox way back in the day and played a little bit of Halo, but never finished it. And it kind of, I don't know, struck my interest one day to kind of find out how the rest of that game went and what it felt like. So I actually found a Let's Play series of videos that didn't have any commentary on them. Occasionally, the guy had little pop-up bubbles, like kind of like the ones on VH1 pop-up video, if you ever watch those music videos. They basically play the video and they play little pop-up text information that has background information or interesting trivia. So that was the style of this Halo Let's Play, and I actually found it really interesting to watch. I mean, it took all of your concentration. You had to watch the game. You couldn't really be doing, you know, multitasking at the time, but it was a way to nicely find out how the game felt and how it went, you know, and finished without having, you know, Mr. Comedian joking in my ear for 5 hours as the game went through. So it was an interesting perspective. Maybe it's not for everybody, but I might check these out at some point.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. James?
Recently, I played Mirror's Edge for the first time. Dear God, there were some bits of that that drove me nuts. I could not work out to get past these. And so the first thing I did was, you know, once after giving a really good try for about 3/4 of an hour or whatever, I eventually went to YouTube and found a Let's Play, and it was a Let's Play without any commentary, and, you know, and you suddenly see the guy do what it is that you've been trying to do, and you're like, oh, I can't believe. So to me, these things are always very, very useful. I think the Let's Plays with commentary are always a lot better when you have two people playing. I mean, it's really great on co-op games and stuff like that, Left 4 Dead, that kind of stuff is always great fun to watch when you've got more than one person and they're both actively involved in the game. One of my favourite Let's Plays ever is two guys on Surgeon Simulator. just absolutely destroying your patient. But it's incredibly funny. And, you know, so those kind of things are fantastic. But I think just one person talking through the game, unless they've got something, you know, specifically very, very interesting to say, then I don't think it's really, you know, it's really that's really useful. So.
Yeah, I'm also coming to the conclusion that when I do a live stream, I change how I play. I mean, in maybe good ways and in bad ways. In bad ways, because I'd probably spend more time doing silly things, like I'd be stacking boxes, and I know that drives people crazy. But other times I'd be, yeah. I'm doing something because I feel as though I'm trying to entertain people, and I shouldn't feel as though I'm entertaining people. I should either be entertaining people or I shouldn't be doing it. So I think it actually changes the way you play. And I agree with you about the two people. Don and I have experimented recently, and hopefully most of the live streams that we do on Run, Think, Shoot, Live will feature some sort of, you know, co-commentary or co-play element, because one person is okay, but it is better with two.
Yeah, I think you need someone to bounce off, you know? You need someone to sort of comment on what you're doing, and then you can comment back or whatever. Yeah, I just think it's the two perspectives are far more interesting to listen to.
Don, anything to add?
Yeah, no, I think the one thing that maybe is an exception to the rule is the Goose videos from Half-Life 2 and the episodes. Now, they weren't really Let's Play or playthroughs because they were edited, you know, for length. They were each about hour and a half or 2 hours. But by himself, he makes some really good insights in the sections and encounters you have in the Half-Life 2 games, which... it may make for entertaining watching and listening, even though he's essentially talking by himself.
Were the original ones edited?
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Yeah, they were not playthroughs. They had, you know, sequences, but it's mostly him just goofing around in the maps in God mode while he talks about something interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think in that case, he had pre-planned what he was going to talk about. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No question. It's certainly, it's not off the cuff. It's it's maybe if it's not scripted, it's at least outlined, you know, beforehand.
Yeah, it's true. And you were talking about not finishing Halo. While we've been talking, I visited the Steam EP2 stats page. And I still find this amazing that if we go to the end of the game, only 50% percentage of players who started the game have finished it.
I've heard tons of people say, oh yeah, I never finished that.
I can't believe that. I find that really hard. I mean, maybe with some other games, but I mean, as James said, I mean, it's almost the pinnacle of what Valve have done. I mean, it's a fantastic game. Why would you not finish it?
Well, it's also possible that people bought the orange box for Portal or for TF2. You know, as being one of the packaged games in memory, you know, Half-Life or Episode 2 specifically, they might not have been buying it for Episode 2, believe it or not, as shocking as that may sound to us. But
no, you're right. I mean, they tried it, they started it, and they just got bored after a while, I suppose.
I mean, yeah, I would say about Half-Life 2, or about Episode 2 especially, is that it's not difficult. There's not that much in there that's that challenging. I mean, there's a bit with the antlions, I guess, you know, when they'll come flooding in, and then you've got the Strider battle, which is pretty tough. But outside of that, it's all pretty straightforward fun, you know?
Yeah.
So it's surprising to me that people haven't sort of, yeah, just gotten through it, because it's not like you hit, you know, like in some games there's that battle, that one battle that's just a nightmare to get through, and it just stops everybody in their tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, but maybe they're not stopping because it's too hard. They're stopping because they got bored. I mean, that must be the key.
I don't understand.
Well, it's possible they're wrong, but, you know.
All right, good. All right, so the next one then is Paper Half-Life 2 Episode 1. Oh, my God, that is so cool. Please tell me you've watched this.
I did just last night and was pleasantly surprised by the effort that went into this. It's not quite like Paper Mario, I think, but it's sort of a retelling of Episode 1 with mostly paper cutouts, some digital effects. And then I went back and watched his other Paper Half-Life series. He does Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2. And they're older. They're 4 or 5 years old now, I think. But yeah, it's a fun bit of you know, of episode two or episode one action, you know, rendered in 2D.
Uploaded in 2009 was his paper Half-Life. Have you seen them, James?
Yeah, I saw those years ago, and you know, they're great, and I love them. But I think what I really love about his work is that he clearly loves Half-Life. You know what I mean? There's so much affection in these things for the actual games that it's so charming. It's brilliant. I love it.
I'm just looking at the one Half-Life where the tentacle comes through the window. I mean, that is just so cool. He sort of picks him up, carries him out. Very, very clever. And of course, he's got to decide what he shows because he's only got like 2 minutes and he can't do everything. So what he's picked is really funny. I've got this huge smile on my face at the moment because I think it's really cool. I think it's a great, a creative way of doing something that I would never have thought of. So if any of the listeners are new to this, you have to go and watch these. They are so funny. Unless, of course, you haven't played the game, in which case it will spoil it. But why are you listening to this podcast if you haven't played the game? But I might watch some of his other stuff as well.
Yeah, hopefully he's got an episode two in the works. I don't know.
One thing I did notice is he missed out the final Strider battle.
I noticed that too, yeah.
Not really noteworthy. As everyone always says, it's a bit of a letdown as the ending of the game.
Yeah, but maybe it's just too hard to make or something. I don't know, yeah. I don't know. All right, so that's just a quick one there. I thought that was really funny. Right, now, next one. What do you think happened to Barney? So this is one of the reasons I like this Reddit subreddit, is that these questions come up again, but they're worded in a different way. And, you know, you've got people giving their opinions and people are still talking about the story. Okay, it's like the end of episode two, but, you know, it's still talking about it. So do you have any theories, Don, about what happened to Barney?
Not really. I'm not a huge fan of these posts. You know, I think it's good that there's still a lot of interest and a lot of discussion and a lot of, you know, theory crafting of, oh, what happened when and why did this happen and where are they now? I personally am not that interested in it. You know, it's great that it's going on. I don't care to read threads like this, unfortunately. I'd rather just, you know, wait for the next installment of the Half-Life series and see what happens.
Yeah, believe it or not, even after my intro, I'm not that actually interested in them either. I'm more interested in the fact that other people are interested in them and they're right. Still talking about it. That's kind of the thing for me. James, what about you?
I don't care what happened to
really, you're in such a bad mood at the moment.
I really hope he's dead. I really do. He's so
dead. Oh my god.
You never get that beer he owes you then, are you?
Alright, I'm gonna say it publicly now. For episode Half-Life 3, I hope it's all about Barney, just to annoy James.
Blue Shift 2, Half-Life episode 3.
The thing is the one thing that really made me hate him is when he takes off the mask at the beginning of Half-Life 1 and goes, "Hi, it's me, Barney from Black Mesa." And it's just like, oh, bugger off, honestly. It's just a little bit of a clunky line and it thoroughly set him up to be a kind of a, you know, a dorky, weird.
Yeah, I suppose they got to, because otherwise I wouldn't have recognised him, because of course now you've got the different graphics and stuff, and I mean his voice was the same perhaps, but I wouldn't have known unless he said, "Hi, I'm Barney." But I know what you mean. But what it did show me actually was it showed me this new website, Half-Life3News.com. Now, oh, I'm not... I said we weren't going to talk about it, but the website is actually quite interesting. For people who are interested in Half-Life 3 news, it's got this really cool timeline, which I'm scrolling through now. So if you're on the live stream, you'll see it. And it's kind of got like a place of you know, what we know about it. But I'd never seen this before. So that's all I'm going to say, because we don't want to talk about episode 3. But...
they're manufacturing Half-Life 3 news on a weekly basis, right? I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, it looks like the site only debuted a little over a month ago. February 9th is their first.
Have you guys seen? This is just a little bit of a quote going off on a tangent again. Have you guys seen these fake film trailers that people make on YouTube? You know, like they're so desperate for Avengers 2 to come out that they'll go and make an Avengers 2 trailer out of clips from all the other Marvel movies. Have you seen this?
I saw one which was for Power Rangers, actually. But that wasn't like a fake one. It was like an unofficial one. But yeah, people... I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. We can't wait, so we make it ourselves. I mean, that's really what we're doing.
Yeah, that the idea goes way back. I remember people doing that for Star Wars Episode 1.
Yeah.
Back in the late, you know, in the late 90s. And, of course, YouTube wasn't even around then, and the video editing programs weren't nearly as easy to use, you know, 15 to 20 years ago. But yeah, it's been a thing for some time.
It's a weird psychological thing, though. You know what I mean? To do that, I mean, you must have to put quite a lot of effort in to create.
Oh, no question. Yeah.
You know, and it's you put that much effort into faking a film trailer. It's bizarre to me. Anyway.
Well, I watched one just before we started this show, which was Batman versus Darth Vader. And the quality of production was unbelievable. Okay, some of the acting wasn't so good and the costume, okay. But if you see this, it could have been from a Star Wars film. It was unbelievable. So the quality of what people are doing now is amazing. I found it on a website called The Awesomer, which is one of my favorite websites. If it's new to you guys.
It's maybe so, not so different in theory than like fan fiction. You know, I mean, people, yes, that's maybe just, you know, prose or written word, but there's certainly a lot of work put into fan fiction too. So, yeah, I think it's maybe sort of the same phenomenon.
Yeah. And when we think about it, we're no different because that's what we do. We make mods.
Yeah.
Or you guys do, and you know, I put them on the website. We make mods because we want to continue that story, or we want to take it in a new line or something.
Yeah, I guess it just sort of feels, I don't know, whatever. There's a difference. There's a definite difference.
Yes, there is. You're right. I mean, when you're desperate enough to take the clips from one show to pretend it's another one, you know, I mean, that's a step too far.
Sort of behavior game.
All right, then. Okay, so next one on our list is something I'm still not sure of. Does he have a helmet? And I suppose this has been asked, you know, 100 times or not, but I just thought I'd get your opinion on this. What do you think he's got, Don? Does Gordon have a helmet?
Absolutely.
James?
No, it's no question in my mind. That's where the HUD is displayed, is on his helmet.
James, what do you think?
No. I don't think so.
Ooh. fight.
Remember from Deathmatch, you know, there was the model of the player with the hazmat suit with the actual hood, you know, like helmet thing on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen it. It does exist, but I've never seen a picture of Gordon wearing it. No, I don't think so. I think it's probably like on a readout on his arm or something like that.
Okay, so it's this, no, without pictures, it didn't happen. That's your stance, is it?
Oh, there's a link halfway down that Reddit page with the picture of him in the helmet.
Oh, yeah, look, there is. Okay. He's got one.
Not sure where that comes from, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if it's real or not, but, I mean, it's not in-game or anything, that's for sure. It's just a...
I'm sure it comes with a helmet. I just don't think he's wearing it for this.
He's badass. Somebody called him a glasshole. He's got like the Google glasses on. So I don't want to go on about it, but do you guys remember I was dreaming about making my mod Blaze Bolden, like these 1930s
mod. Yeah.
One of my plans was that the readout was projected from the gun directly onto his eyeballs. That was going to be my the way of doing it. So when he got hit, it would shake because the gun was just out of alignment. That was kind of my idea for that. All right, then. So moving on. Half-Life 2 has 68 loading screens. What, again, probably like Don says about, you know, Barney and stuff, I don't give a head crab's fart how many loading screens it's got. Sorry?
You know what's more interesting than the fact it has 68 loading screens?
That somebody's actually counted them and stuff, yes?
Anything is more interesting.
It has 70 maps.
So I just thought that this...
didn't he miscount them?
No, he said, you know, it's more interesting that there are 70 different maps that make up Half-Life, right?
Oh, okay, 70 maps. 68 yeah.
loading screens because they're in between all the maps, but effectively there's...
So the fact that he's recorded them and stuff, I think this is great. I love this sort of stuff.
I have trouble finding any interest in this, to be honest. But other than, so the one interesting thing to me is maybe trying to work out how much time has passed from the beginning to the end, not the number of maps or number of loading
screens.
Yeah,
I think that was an interesting point.
Day one and day two and day 10 and all that sort of stuff.
Like if you look at Half-Life 1, it's got, I think, 96 maps, if I remember right. And it takes place over, judging by the number of day-night cycles you see on the outside, it's just over like 2 or 3 days, I think.
Mm.
Although in-game, we play, what, maybe 10, not even 10 hours, you know, say 6 to 10 hours of playtime.
Well, how long does it take you to get through Ravenholm?
Oh, an hour, maybe?
So that's how long the nighttime lasts.
Right.
Yeah, but we never put times on everything. It's not like the TV show 24 Hours, is it?
Oh, 24 Hours. I watched the season out recently. Interesting.
Okay, Ravenholm. Let me... where are you? Ravenholm. Blues. Ravenholm. Can't find Ravenholm. We don't go to Raven. 1 hour, 20 minutes. Don, you took 1 hour, 10 minutes.
Yeah. So, yeah, so Jim's right. It was turning night in Black Mesa East just before Ravenholm, and when we get out, it's maybe not even sunrise, right? The sun is up, I think, by the time we get out.
Yeah, artistic license. That's what we would claim for that one, I would imagine. All right, the next one is probably the worst one of the lot, which is this ASCII head crab found on KXBMNet. Now, I'm not going to talk about KXBMNet. I'm not going to talk about all of that stuff. I just wanted to talk about, I thought it was kind of, I like ASCII art. And I just wanted to say, oh, look, that's kind of cool. And it's a headcrab, Don, so you must like it.
Yeah, I do. It looks like it's a, you know, I recognize this, the shape of the headcrab, because it's a picture like you can find on, surely online, of this exact angle and whatnot. So, unfortunately, yeah. I don't think it's something that, you know, somebody put hours and hours into. I think they ran it through a quick ASCII converter, so... It kind of feels cheap to me.
Yeah. All right. Should we jump
this,
that one?
Yeah. Well, what is this KXBM? Is that the possible Black Mesa source?
Well, I think one of those websites was forwarded to KXBM.net. And yeah, all to do with Black Mesa source. And then so many people on Reddit were talking about, oh, this is Half-Life 3.
Of course.
You know, all of that sort of stuff. And it was like, oh, okay. So, you know, I'm not worried about that. But I just, the ASCII art was the only thing I was going to highlight there.
Yeah.
All right, then. So we can jump. This one is a bit more interesting. And the title here is Wait. So Half-Life 2 is set in Eastern Europe. Why does nobody have an accent? Valve didn't explain this, and it's really bothering me. So again, people talking and thinking about it. And the answer is pretty simple, that the Combine move people around. But I think that there is a valid point here, is that there should have been a greater variety of accents. And I think the only two accents we've got are American and then Cubbage, or is it Cubbage? Who's got like an English accent.
And then, what's his name? Grigori as well,
obviously. Oh, yeah, okay. I mean, yes... We move them around, but you don't take everybody from North America and put them in Eastern Europe and vice versa.
But, you know, I mean, the answer is really simple. Well, because they wanted a game that was going to appeal to the American and English market. Sorry, but the, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And they love the architecture of Eastern Europe. So, you know, they took the best of everything and put it together. So, I mean, what's interesting is with the same with the head-up display and everything else, people try and, you know, make it all work in a real world thing, and of course it isn't. You know, the reasons are very, very obvious why they did things the way they did them, and trying to make this fantasy world, you know, somehow make sense in the real world.
Yeah, there's a certain level of suspension belief suspension that we need to go through. And you okay there, James? Yeah. It sounds like you're fighting your
sorry, apologies.
Microphone again. we need to suspend our belief systems. Some things, you know, oh, aliens, oh, for some people that's just impossible. Oh, and a scientist can shoot, you know. And for some people, certain things are easy to suspend. Others are not. I mean, I find it hard to suspend the idea that I carry 10 weapons and that it doesn't slow me down.
But I mean, you know, if you're looking for realism, then go play armor. You know? This is what I continually get a bit miffed about, is the fact that everybody, you know, is this concept of realism in games. Games aren't real. You wouldn't play them if they were real. You could play, go play armor. That's relatively real. But real isn't fun.
No, but there's a difference between real and believable.
Okay. I can live with that.
You know, I mean, I can suspend my belief and think that somebody could build, a gravity gun.
Yeah.
But the stupid thing is that I can't carry all of those guns.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's a personal problem, isn't it? That we believe some things and not others. Don, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, this person really seems pedantic to me. I don't... The simple explanation is what Jim said. You know, they worked with the voice actors that they had, and they wanted to appeal to their core audiences. Finding a way to explain things in the universe is not that interesting to me. People are welcome to do it, and it's sort of the same thing as the discussion we had a couple posts ago. Yeah, it's interesting that the discussion is happening and maybe it's lively and people are interested in explaining this, but it just doesn't hold much interest for me. I don't need much to suspend my disbelief. If these people need more, then, you know, that's their problem.
Yeah, I'm curious to know what sort of accents they used for the other languages. You know, I mean, of course, when they made it Russian, everybody sounded Russian. I don't know. I mean, there must be different accents within Russia. It's huge. It has to be. Within North London and South London, there's a different accent. So there's no doubt about that. But I'd be kind of curious to sort of see if non-native speakers have an opinion about how their Spanish or German or French Half-Life sounded. Because, you know, if I listen to a French commentary, all of the French sounds the same to me. I can't tell accents in another language very well. Can you guys?
No, except for German.
Okay, you can tell the difference between parts of Germany, can you?
Sometimes, because they're so different between the north and the south.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
All right. My flair for language is terrible.
All right. I mean, I can tell the difference between Spanish because, of course, I live here, so I get to hear lots of different accents. But, you know, within a video game, I don't know. Okay, we can move on. So this is probably going to be boring to Don again, but if the Combine cops and soldiers are just modified humans, what happened to Barney? Is he modified?
Boring.
Yeah, boring. It's just the, you know...
My understanding was that Barney wasn't a Metro cop, but he dressed like a Metro cop to get to Gordon.
What right. People are saying here is that the Metro cops are normal, but the rest of them have been transhumanized.
Yeah, they're the lowest level of Combine. They're not entirely human. And then, as they said in the post, as you move up through the different levels, then you get more modification. But the Metro cops are not humans.
All right.
From my understanding. And that's the
discussion. Yeah, I would say for more on this, people should go watch the Civil Protection series on YouTube by the guy that did Freeman's Mind.
Okay, yeah.
Because he basically takes a couple Metro cops in their daily life and puts them in humorous situations. So
it's quite funny.
Even if it's not, you know, the game per se, it actually puts a really funny light on the life of a Metro cop in City 17. Yeah.
And it won't answer your questions about this, but you'll laugh. So that's the main thing. All right, then. So we can move on quickly. The stages of Half-Life 3 deprivation. Again, I don't want to talk about Half-Life 3, but I just thought that these were quite funny. You know, stage 1, you've just beaten episode 2 and you're in a bit of a shock. Stage 2, you're expecting it at GamesCon. Stage 3, you think maybe tomorrow they'll just release it randomly. Stage 4, you start searching Google. Stage 5, you start thinking about theories, about taking Gabe's weight away from Pi, and you get this, you rearrange the numbers, Half-Life 3 confirmed. Stage 6, maybe I'll forget it will be released one day. And then stage 7, which is where Don is at, acceptance. Patience is a virtue. Why not look on the bright side? The longer it takes, the better it is, right? right? So I thought it was kind of funny. You guys? No?
Yeah, well, quick comment. We especially hit sort of a fever pitch of Half-Life 3 speculation.
Recently.
Yeah, with GDC going on and Valve having a couple of confirmed dates, including a presentation at 3 p.m. on March 3rd. You know, it's whatever. But I've been in acceptance for a long time. And what I found really cathartic for me recently was to write that fake Half-Life 3 review for your site, Philip. So that was actually a great fun exercise for me to go through. So
I'll be announcing the winners later this week. So, all right, good. So we can jump that one. Okay, I'm so sorry. I said we weren't going to talk about Half-Life 3, but this one was, this one was, if Half-Life 3 is announced tomorrow, I'll give you all $5. I thought it was really funny. And he got like 780 comments.
Looks like we missed both those. Okay.
And I didn't even bother reading, and I certainly didn't expect you to read all of those comments, but just it made me laugh. You know, somebody's going to – he knows it's not going to happen, but he's going to get people to respond to his thread. And so that would have been – I bet if Gabe had seen that, he'd be like, oh, maybe we could make an announcement just to get this guy in trouble. So funny. All right then, so we've got a couple left. We haven't.
That was it for the list we have. One thing I would say that's out there at the moment, maybe you guys will cover this on the next one, but I noticed this morning there's a new post up on Reddit around the content of Half-Life 2 that was ditched before release.
I saw that.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating. If anyone wants to go and have a look, I recommend it.
Okay, yeah, well, we can talk about that. Let me see if I can find it. It was the cut chapters.
So yeah, it's basically about the cut chapters and that kind of thing. But I think there's an interesting point from a modding perspective, which is that, you know, like, but looking at it and looking at the designs and the and everything, I mean, obviously he doesn't have actually the actual levels there, but he's talking about the designs and he's got images of the different units and that kind of thing that was there and ditched. They ditched so much stuff. Now, from a modding perspective, you're loathe to ditch things. You know what I mean? You really don't. You're like, oh, I've worked for so long on this. But sometimes some things just don't work, you know?
Yeah.
And you spend so much time trying to make it work and desperately trying to shoehorn it in. And it might be a good idea for a different project, but just not this one, you know?
Yeah.
But I just thought there was a really interesting lesson to learn there, that if something doesn't work, cut it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, what Don remembers it better than I do, but what's that phrase? That you've only finished when you can't take anything away.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, they apply the same thing to movies, you know? You have to whittle it down to a point where you can't take anything else away. So.
Well, there's another thing, which is that your project is only as good as the best idea that you rejected.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with, as a modder, it's tough to live by that principle.
It really is.
You see it as a sunk cost of your time or effort, and it's really tough to cut something, especially unique, that wasn't in the original game that you want to really show off. But, you know, I haven't watched this video yet, but the prime example from Half-Life 2 that I remember is that water, that tentacle, the Hydra, yeah.
The Hydra, yeah.
They showed this off in images and trailers and everything like that, and it looked cool, but they ultimately said our playtesters just did not have any fun playing against it, and they made the admittedly it's got to be a tough decision to scrap it entirely, and it has not surfaced again in episode 1 or episode 2. So you know, more credit to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also, you know, a really brave decision as well from a design perspective. So
yeah.
No, I agree with you completely. It is a fascinating topic about what we put in and what we take out and all sorts of stuff like that. But, I mean, for the average guy sitting in his sitting room or his office who makes a few things, it's hard to judge him by the same standards, isn't it?
True, but that doesn't matter. Oh, okay, so, yeah. So, but it doesn't mean there's not a good artistic lesson to learn there. You know?
No.
So obviously, you know, you do what you can and you build what you can, and sometimes you might release it anyway because you think someone out there might have fun playing it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's worth releasing, in my opinion. There's no point in just binning it. But, you know, I've got two maps I've been working on at the moment, and I think there's stuff in there that just don't work. I've been you know, tinkering with them since last year, and it's just ridiculous. So I'm just going to release them and say, move on, you know what I mean? They kind of work, but not quite. And, you know, I'd rather spend my time doing something else.
Yeah, exactly. But if we judged you by the same as Valve standards, we'd say you can't release those.
True. They're making money.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's wrong to do that. What I'm saying is that we should have varying standards for different people.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree.
That's what I'm saying. And I think you're right to release them and say, look, I've come to a creative dead end here. I don't feel as though I can take it anymore. But you're absolutely right to release it because I hate the idea of interest in maths stuck on people's hard drives.
Before, haven't we? About the fact that, you know, all the ditched content that must be out there, all the half-created maps and everything that is out there that we'd love to just get a hold of, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I posted one a couple of months back, which was untextured. Don's got a great memory. Can you remember what it was, Don?
Half-Life? Or
you know, Half-Life 2. Episode 2.
Yeah, no, I don't remember what. I did review it, I think. I don't remember which one it was.
I don't know if you've played it, James. Do you?
I've passed. Probably not. I haven't played that much.
Floodworks.
No.
Okay, so I've opened it up in the page now, so if anybody's watching the live stream or watch this on YouTube, you'll sort of see the images. But this was a great piece of work. It really was fun, but it's 90% dev textures because you just never got around to it. And I found it on somebody's site, and I contacted them and said, look, can I release this? He was like, yeah, okay. It was actually fun, and I'm glad that he did.
Well, it's like what we were talking about earlier. It's like Tetris, right? If it's designed well, it doesn't matter what it looks like.
Yeah, and I suppose that's different from what you're talking about because yours isn't a concept that works that you just haven't finished. You're sort of in a place where you're just not sure where to go forward, I suppose.
No, there's just certain design flaws to the original layout and stuff like that you know, I could, you know, continue to tweak with it until finally I crack the problem, but quite frankly, it's probably not worth, you know what I mean? It's probably better to move on. So, there you go.
Well, I'm glad you're going to release them.
I am. Yeah, we're getting them tested at the moment, so.
Okay.
You're telling me lots of things I already know.
All right, okay. I wish more authors would sort of do that. I wish more authors would say, okay, you know, let's. I've reached the end of this for whatever reason. Let's.
Well, sometimes, you know, you want to keep the ideas for different projects. So you don't want to necessarily release them in such a crap format. You know, when you come up with a really nice. You know, a really nice mechanic or something you really like. You know, you tried it once, it's not quite working, but I can probably use it in a different map. So it all goes into my library.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, if you feel as though you're going to be able to use it in the future, you don't want to release it and not be happy with it. Yeah.
It depends on how proud you were of it, I guess.
Yeah, how much work you put in, stuff like that. All right, well, we've come to the end of our list of Reddit conversations. And that brings us on to something that James and I were discussing on Steam earlier today, which was to do with the recommendation system. So you're going to have to be the mediator here, Don, because James and I are going to be fisticuffs. Would you like to start, James, or shall I?
I'll start because I made the point, right?
All right.
And I've noticed in a lot of recent mods, and actually, I mean, through the history of the site as well, the play it now is being overused, in my opinion. And the reason why I think that is, and this is what I postulated at least to Philip earlier on, was that there's a difference between telling somebody when they should play the mod to rating the quality of the mod itself. Because there are lots of mods out there that are very playable and fun to play, but they're not the greatest quality. You know, they're not the greatest quality mods necessarily. But there's you know, lots of mods I would say to people, of course you play it now, you know, we all love Half-Life 2, we all want new maps to play, there's fun to be had here, you know, play it now. But that's not necessarily the same as, this is a great map.
Okay, can I respond, have you finished?
Yeah, respond to that bit, and then
we'll see. Alright, fair enough. Alright, well, what we have here is a fundamental misunderstanding of what the recommendation system is. And let me give you a perfect example. If I had the Stanley Parable on the site, I would recommend it as a play it. But I hated it. And the recommendation is what you think somebody should do, not you telling somebody what you think of the mod. So my review would say, oh, I can see that the, you know, the quality and the effort went into this, but I really hated it. I really did. I hated every almost second of it. I really didn't enjoy it. But I recognised that it was very creative, and I recognised that most people, if not everybody, should play it. So that's where I feel the misunderstanding about the recommendation comes is. It's not necessarily a representation of your review. It's more what they should do with the mod itself. And to finish very quickly, personally, I don't like play it now or play it later. I only have three main recommendations. Avoid it, maybe, and play it, plus the personal favourite. And I think that that's all that's needed. But so many people fought me and said, no, I want to be able to give, you know, like five choices, because they were equating it with like a five-star system. And I fought and fought and fought, and in the end I gave in and said, okay, you can have like five, but I only think that you need three. So yeah, that's my counter.
Let me challenge you on something there. So
if
it's simply just a recommendation of when you should play it, then why does it run from red to green?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's not a recommendation of when you should play it. It's a recommendation of if you should or you shouldn't. But people wanted five,
yeah,
and I had to come up with this idea of, well, if it's really good, you should play it as quickly as possible, play it now. And if it's good and you should play it sometime, well, there's no rush. So it was like, play it now, play it later.
But yeah. I guess what I mean is that red is generically intended for bad things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Green is intended for good things. So we have
an amber for middle.
This flow of green to red. So the implication is that you're giving a review score based on the quality of the work that you're representing.
Yes, and in going against me, I'm fighting for your corner now. The actual recommendations also have little stars on them as well. Yes, I know. You can see my face now. I'm pretty embarrassed about this. But basically, what I'm trying to say is that it's a compromise. It was a compromise of not wanting like a stupid system where people came along and just said five stars, but they didn't write anything, and a compromise between saying what people should do but not giving their opinion. So I recognize it's not right, but I certainly don't want to go down the route of great, good, okay, poor, terrible.
Okay.
Because what happens if I, and I have done that, what happens is people don't write. They just click the button and they think that the image is enough for them. And as I sort of mentioned in the Steam chat, if people don't put a proper if people don't write a proper review, I remove their recommendation image. Mm. And people don't seem to reply to my emails, because I email people when I do it and say, look, I've done this.
Yeah.
And they keep doing it. So I don't know. Don, you kind of like, you know, the facilitator here. What do you think?
Oh, wait, was I supposed to be listening? No. you know, my first point is I agree with James. Play it now is overused, though. So that said, you know, when I write a review on your site, I think it's actually kind of a hybrid of my own score that I would give a mod and how I would recommend it to others. Because, of course, how you think about a mod and write about a mod is going to be colored by your own experience playing it. So unless you really had an objective look at the mod, which is really difficult to do, I think, it's difficult to be in a position to say, yes, others will like this for this reason or not like this for another reason, and therefore I recommend it to be played now or later or never.
I agree that everybody has their own perspective and everybody has their own opinion, right? My way of reviewing mods for Half-Life 2, and this is probably not fair, but this is what I do anyway, is how close is it to me to playing a real Half-Life 2 map? Which, you know, for abstract mods and stuff like that is obviously isn't a fair comparison. But for the most part, for most of the maps, how close is this to actually experiencing Half-Life 2, a new map for Half-Life 2? Because at the end of the day, that's what I'm looking for, you know?
Yeah, although that's probably true for the Source Engine stuff. Now, for Half-Life 1, being that it's, you know, what, 17 years old now, it's maybe a little more difficult to play, or to judge it in that fashion, because in general, the quality has gotten better over the years of maps that have released, and we've seen a ton of mods, even if they're not sort of the top scoring ones, let's say, that essentially are more playable, more attractive even than the maps from Half-Life. Not all of the maps from Half-Life, but, you know, in general, let's say. So it's difficult to apply that reasoning across the board, I think. It's maybe a good rule of thumb, but, getting back to the way I score them, I think, I'm trying to think what I do. I think my score is generally based on how I experience the mod. And then if there's something significant, either positive or negative, that would color my recommendation toward others rather than my score of the mod, then that influences what I might give the mod. But in general, I'm pretty tough on mods too. I don't give away play it nows liberally. That said, I have recently, when I've been playing the contest especially, I'm a little more forgiving perhaps on my scoring of those mods than I am in other prepackaged ones that come from a single author or a single team, let's say. For whatever that's worth.
Yeah, I think you have to take the timeline into consideration and what they've managed to achieve within the limited amount of time that was available. From a mapper's, you can just see that some of the work's amazing.
But doesn't that point apply to the stuff that gets released? I mean, we don't know how long it took. I mean, maybe we see this map and we say, yeah, it's okay, but the guy might have made it in a day. And if you take into account how long it took to make...
But no one asked him to make it in a day.
Sorry?
True, but no one asked him to make it in a day.
All right, well, that's fair enough. But he did. But if you're judging something on how long it took to make, you've got to do that consistently across the board.
Well, nobody else is under a deadline quite like that.
No, but maybe he's got a deadline or she's got a deadline. I've got a plane to catch tomorrow. I'm having a baby tomorrow. I've got to finish this map.
Yeah, but the point is that so if I'm building a map and I release it and it doesn't work, say, for example, it looks amazing, but the gameplay is terrible, right? Mm-hmm. Then as a mapper, I had the responsibility to make sure that I tested it and that people played it and gave me feedback and I fixed any issues with it and that it was fun to play. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in a competition situation, that is also part of it, but due to the restricted timeline, you're working within within that time frame. It's much harder to be able to do that when you have a time frame set. I think that's the point, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just being devil's advocate here because... Sorry, did I cut you off?
No, go on, go for it.
Okay, I'm just being devil's advocate because I think really what it comes down to is knowing the reviewer. And I remember sort of talking to somebody about this probably 50, 30, at least 25 years ago to do with record reviews. This guy was reading his record reviews in one of these magazines and he said, oh, okay, this guy is normally really hard and he doesn't like this sort of stuff. So when I read his review, I know what he's like. And one of the things I want to do on the website this year, this summer, is kind of have a trust system so that you can sort of trust people. So you'd be able to sort of trust Don. And you could see his reviews would have more prominence for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's like having official reviews of a magazine versus your own review.
Not necessarily. It's just that you'd know. For example, people know that I'm quite unforgiving. I'm quite forgiving.
I was going to say, what?
Yeah. Forgiving. Exactly. Yes. So they know that if I give it a play it, for many people that might only be a maybe. And I think it's maybe just a case of getting used to what other people review. I know now, James, that your reviews are quite hard. So if I see that you've given it a maybe, I'm more likely to play it because I think, oh, he's just been a hard ass here and I'm just going to give it a try. That's really what I'm trying to get across, that I don't think we can have a universal standard because even if I changed the names and said great, good, okay, your great is different from my great. And that's why I always went on... What would you recommend I do? Would you recommend I play it or not? Even if you hated it, should I see this film? Yeah, you should, because I know... Okay, my girlfriend hates science fiction. And if she saw a film that was science fiction, she'd recommend it to me, but she wouldn't recommend it to her friends.
Okay.
So it's about what you'd recommend it to other people. But I'm interested to hear from the listeners and the readers. This website is for you. And if we want to open this debate up again, thanks, James, then I'm okay to do that. And if it means rearranging the system, I'm willing to do that if it makes the website better. So
I would be interested to get people's opinions to know how can we get away from this constant play it now.
Well, mate, what have you considered that those people enjoyed it more than you?
I'm not saying that they enjoyed it. It's not a matter of how they enjoyed it and whether they enjoyed it more or whatever. I'm just saying that to a certain extent, play it now has become a meaningless, you know, a meaningless standard to a certain extent.
I know exactly what you mean, although it's. And you know, maybe to an extent, Philip, I've already come up with that sort of trusted reviewers list in my mind. Like when I read your review, I always tend to think, yeah, he's more forgiving, so he's going to give it a little higher rating and recommendation than I would typically, you know.
Yeah.
And the same with other reviewers who've done frequent write-ups on your site. I've already sort of done that internally. But I think the main point is here that the site isn't just a scoring system. You know, requires you to write at least a little bit of intelligent text to support your review. So if a visitor's really interested in seeing how a mod scores, but the feeling about a mod, they have more than just the average score to go by or red to green on the spectrum. They have substantive text about it if it's got a fair number of reviews.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right, okay. So feel free to chime in on this subject if you're a reviewer on the site, or even if you're not a reviewer, tell me why you don't review, why you don't use the recommendation images. I added them years ago because I wanted a way of ordering the mods. And you could argue that the website would be a very, very different place now if we had none of that, if people just wrote reviews.
Oh, no. You definitely need a rating system.
All right. Okay. So, well, we'll see. And while we're talking about that, Jan, the coder, and I are working on a way of allowing people to put individual ratings for individual maps for the VIL competitions.
I think that's really key. I think it's really hard to judge an overall, you know?
Yeah, especially with the VIL competitions, more than anything else, as Don says, when it's made by the same team or by the same person, even if it's got a lot of maps, there is varying quality. But in the case of the VIL competitions, it is so different. But we're having to look at a way that is just a visual representation, not an actual numerical representation that works in the system. You'd still have to put one overall view, but you could, you know, for each individual review, you could put like a little thumbnail. So we're working on that. All right, great. So we've kind of come to the end. So thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it. Please feel free to post any comments or questions on the post, which will be up in a few days. Excuse me, and we'll do our best to reply. Before we go off air, I'd like to remind listeners about a few things. Number one, there is a video challenge on at the moment, and this is to do with the Sniperville map. Anybody who can make or upload a video of themselves playing the super awesome Sniper Arena on hard and win gets a chance to be entered into. I should have said that at the beginning. Can be entered into a draw to win a game, because I'm actually curious. Can anybody beat that map on hard? Have you played it, guys?
Not on hard. God.
Where is this? Is this on Map Court? Where is it?
This is Sniperville.
Oh, okay.
The very first mapping competition, Darren Weeks, aka Custom Gamer, is running an event called the VIL Retrospective, where he plays one VIL every month. And I played it to be prepared for it, and I played that, and I had to cheat on easy. I had to cheat, and I still didn't finish it because I fell down and died, and was like, right, okay, I've had enough. So I was curious: is anybody good enough out there that could beat it on hard?
Is it fun enough to keep trying?
Well, it's super awesome. I'm not sure that fun would be the adjective I use.
Yourself off and try again.
No, it wasn't fun for me. But I want to see somebody who's good enough to do it. I really do.
I think you have to go in with the idea that you're going to die a lot. And, you know, make liberal use of your quick save key. Yes, it can be fun. I was frustrated by it, and there's no way I'm going to play it on hard. I don't care what the reward is.
It, it reminds me, when I first started getting into gaming, I used to play a little bit of Unreal Tournament, not online, but against the bots. And there were like different levels of ability, and I was always like one or two at the bottom. And then I found out that somebody could beat the whole game at the hardest level.
Oh my God.
And I eventually found a video of this girl playing. And she made it look really easy, and it was very interesting, her tactics. And I realized from then on that there's more to beating a game than just being able to run and shoot. It's how you run, and it's how you shoot. And maybe this is the same. Maybe it's just a clever use of tactics that will get you through. I don't know. Anyway, so I just wanted to remind you listeners about that. The second is the actual events themselves. Don is running the Classic of the Month, which is every third weekend. No, first or third, Don?
Third, yeah. It's coming up this next Saturday.
This next week.
Live stream.
Yep. So Don will be is running the Classic of the Month. Every month he plays a classic, and he plays through it, and then we talk about it, and we put it on the front page. Last month was Poke 646, and this month is... Shh, we can't say just yet. And as I already mentioned, Darren is running the Ville retrospective. So if you're kind of into catching up on old maps and mods, check those out. They're pretty cool. And you can find them on the Participate menu item on the site. If you click Participate, then you can go to Current Events, and there are links to both of those events happening. The next thing is to remind people that the next mapping challenge will be announced this Thursday and is being run in conjunction with mapcore.org. Hopefully there'll be more entries than usual, because if the MapCore guys and gals are getting involved, that'll be kind of cool. And there are some very cool prizes on offer, and I don't mean a fridge, which was one of the comments in the thing.
One thing I was going to say is I think what I'm going to be doing over the next few months, if anyone's interested, I'd be interested in feedback, is putting together just a sort of a series. I don't know whether it's going to be written or video or whatever, around all the different NPCs in Half-Life 2 and how you can use them and where you should use them in your mods and maps, and how to get the best out of each different sort of unit, basically.
Okay.
Which I thought might be quite useful for modders. So some,
yeah.
Oh, I definitely think that should be a video event. If not a total video event, then at least have videos of examples of the various AI and how you use them.
All depends on how busy work is, but I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
Say that again, James. It all depends on
how busy I am at work, but we'll see what we can do.
All right. Well, give me your boss's number and I'll give him a call. Get you a few days off or something. Well, that looks fun. That sounds like an interesting interesting idea. I mean, those kind of things, as Don said, I think they'd be kind of cool in videos to sort of show us where they work, where they don't work, and why they don't work in these kind of situations.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of stems out of, I've recently seen quite a lot of different units being used in ways that I don't think really get the best out of them at all. So, whatever. We'll see what happens.
All right, great. So, that's it for this month. So, thanks, listeners. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming on. And see ya.
Happy Mother's Day.
See ya.
Take it.
Happy Mother's Day?
It's Mother's Day in the UK. But
oh, is it? Oh, gosh, better call my mum too. We don't have, it's a different day in Spain, but all right. So anyway, we've gone off tangent. So thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning. RunThinkShootLive.com lists and reviews single-player maps and mods from the Half-Life series of games.